Well, hello everybody. Hello and welcome to Essex Church, where this community of Kensington Unitarians meets each week for worship as well as for other activities during the week. As Unitarians, we have no fixed creeds or beliefs. We don't require those to bind us together. We're each encouraged to seek a spiritual path that has meaning and purpose for us. But I think what brings us together here with others is because we know that there are times when we need the strength and support of one another as we travel life's journey. Ours is a community made by all those who walk through our doors, and you're welcome, whoever and however you are this morning. So let's take a moment to check how indeed we are. Are we aching in body or mind? Do we feel restless or unsure? Are we flustered with minds busy somewhere other than here? Accepting ourselves as we are, let's take a moment of stillness to gather ourselves in this place and time, in this circle of humanity. We're here for an hour of music and stillness, thoughts and prayers, words that might inspire us to aspire once more to be the best that we can be, to do what we can to make this world a better place for all. And I'm lighting our chalice flame today, this symbol of a worldwide liberal religious faith. And I'm lighting our chalice flame today, this symbol of a worldwide liberal religious faith, in recognition of the bridge builders of the world, those who build bridges between different communities, those who build bridges that promote understanding, those who reach out hands of reconciliation and healing across our world's divides, and in so doing, renew hope and possibility once more. One day listening to the news of our world tells us of its troubles, and I think that's all the more reason why I just for a moment, and also to the work of our visitor here today, Simon Keyes, who is the director of St. Ethelberger today, Seinfeldberger's Centre, director of St. Ethelberger Conciliation. We're going to speak a little bit about St. Ethelberger's work and then lead us in prayer. Good to have you here.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to come here. No thanks to Transport for London. I nearly didn't make it. But anyway, we forgive them. it's lovely to see the F-Word exhibition here. We have a close relationship with the Forgiveness Project. And in fact, forgiveness, of course, is one of the number of things at the heart of reconciliation. So I just wanted to talk a little bit this morning about what reconciliation is and what we do about it, and then try and make it personal for you. Okay. So I'm going to start with, I'm sure many of you have seen in the press this week or on the television, if you have one, the story of Nakula Basili Nakula. This somewhat strange Coptic guy who's made this film, quotes film, which is many Muslims have found very offensive and demeaning to the Prophet. As a result, there have been riots, notably in Libya, where the US ambassador was killed, Chris Stevens. We'll hold him in our prayers today. But it's spread like wildfire across a number of places in the Middle East, in Egypt and Tunisia and Algeria, other places. What I just ask you the question, what do you think, what do you feel, what do you register when you read a story like that? It's a story of violence, of intolerance, of hatred, bound up with religion, bound up with politics. So what do we think of when we read a story like that? And I would guess, if we sat down and discussed this here, lots of different points would come out. Don't some of us feel that the Muslims are a little bit precious about their scripture? Surely their prophet Muhammad, this great man who's inspired many people, not just Muslims, ought to be able to take a little bit of criticism from ignorant fundamentalists in Florida. You know, but aren't they a little bit precious about it? But what do we think of those people in Florida? You know, they're just out to provoke trouble, aren't they? And their religion clearly can't be worth listening to. Terry Jones, or whatever his name is, the pastor who's sort of implicated in all this, burning the Quran. Isn't he just out to create trouble? Isn't it strange the way these things spread, that a riot in Libya gets mimicked in Egypt the next day, and then the day after that somewhere else? Aren't there sort of rather strange patterns of violence here? And don't we fear that somehow these are embedded in Islam? At the end of the day, don't we fear that the Ummah, the idea of the worldwide community of Muslims, looks after itself? Don't we fear that? Who are these Copts, these Copt Christians who might be behind this? They seem to be crocking a lot in the news. In Egypt and other places. They're an oppressed minority, sure, but they do turn to violence quite readily, but they claim to be Christians. I'm taking some provocative points of view here, but I hope you recognise some of those. But my point here is that if we sat down and discussed this, we would probably end up with not only a range of opinions, but probably some quite bitter divisions between us. Those of us who have very dear Muslim friends would probably want to defend the role of some Muslims in this situation. Others might be more hostile. So we could very easily end up divided. What is certainly the case is we feel very distant and divided from the people involved in this incident, the people in Libya, in Egypt, in Florida, etc. So the point here is that if reconciliation is about building relationships across divisions of culture, conflict, religion, it actually should start with us, because we never know how we are connected to world events. There are stories about how our young Muslims are sometimes radicalized, not solely, but a component in their radicalization could be the way they are treated by the likes of us. So we may have a role in radical Islam, whether we know it or not. So everything is connected, as I'm sure the Unitarians say. So if we're going to be talking about reconciliation, we need to start with the emotions and judgments that we ourselves hold and make. So when you read these stories, be conscious of what they do to you. And reconciliation is fundamentally about a whole lot of letting go. You will never be a reconciler unless you find a way of letting go of your judgments, your emotions, the hate, the love that polarise the world around you. And that's exactly what the Forgiveness Exhibition will tell you if you read it. So reconciliation is about a whole lot of letting go. And it starts with me and it starts with you. So let me just tell you a very little bit about Snettelbergers. Ancient medieval church in the city, like most of them, struggling to find a purpose in the 20th century. Effectively redundant. Grade 1 listed gem, which nobody could even put a coat of paint on without the approval of half a dozen authorities. Quite a headache for the Bishop of London to know what to do with it. Costing money, but nobody using it. Problem solved by the IRA. 1993, the Bishopsgate bomb was placed right outside the door. We weren't the target, we were a classic example of collateral damage. The target was the buildings in the city. And the IRA planted a lorry full of ammonium nitrate and various other things outside the door, let it off on a Saturday morning, having given a warning, so there was no one in the area, almost no one in the area. And they claim $1 billion worth of damage to the City of London. Very interesting that Sinn Féin and the IRA account in dollars rather than pounds or punts or euros. Anyway, but we won't go into that now. Poor old Snettelbergers, 60% of it was destroyed. The next week, the bishop discovered that the nameless person in the diocese had not renewed the insurance. So a grade 1 listed ruin without a penny in the bank. all the professional advice was sell the site. The Bishop of London, who is a remarkable man, Bishop Richard Charters, you've probably seen him on the telly. If you've met him face to face, you will know he's an extremely charismatic and unusual man. He ignored, defied the professional advice and said, no, we are going to rebuild this. Don't quite know how we're going to do it. We are going to rebuild it. And we're going to rebuild it in a way that helps us understand how it was destroyed. What is this conflict, this war in Ireland that has led to such destruction in our own backyard? And so it took 10 years, took a very difficult fundraising campaign, which was actively opposed by other people in the church, would you believe? But nevertheless was eventually successful, and 9 years ago it reopened. I do encourage you to come and see it, because it's a very interesting building. Part medieval, part modern, a very interesting hybrid, very flexible space, but it's one that clearly tells a long historical story. And out the back, we've managed to create a little private garden with probably the only Bedouin tent in the city there, made of goat's hair. A little space where 25 people can sit in a circle to meditate, to talk about difficult things, to build relationships, and try and find new types of conversation, new ways of talking to each other that enable us to grapple with the multiple divisions and dilemmas and polarizations that we have. In the 9 years it's been open, we think something like about 80,000 people have visited it. It's a small place, it's full. This group would fill it. It's 70, 80 people is the maximum you can get in. So you'll see that's an awful lot of people from 47 countries around the world. And the very interesting thing, my job was created when the centre was opened, and they didn't quite know what to do with it. And the Bishop of London called me to see him. And I said, well, what is reconciliation? I come from a social work background. I don't know anything about reconciliation. And he said, it's your job to find out. And so I said, well, how should I do that? And he said, fill the place with life and see what happens. So that's why we've concentrated on getting so many people to come to the place and share their stories, their experiences, their skills, their theologies, their politics, their relationships, share them with this little container, St. Ethelberg, that have captured all this wisdom and experience. And now we've moved on a little bit. Now we have a professional team of people there who are bringing together people from South and North Sudan, who are very active doing things in relation to the Middle East and Northern Ireland, who have been at the cutting edge of some of the more difficult interreligious work in London, and pioneer a whole number of new approaches to this. My colleague Marianne over there is one who's done some remarkable work in that area. We can provide, some clearly thought through, careful, professional support to people who are grappling with really difficult divisions. But it's really important to say that St. Ethelberg's his aspiration is not to be some kind of expert a third sector non-governmental organization. It is to be a movement of people who recognize that reconciliation is at the heart of all religious traditions. It's very explicit in the Christian tradition, as some of you may know. St. Paul says, we have a ministry of reconciliation. It's put there boldly like that. And it's true in all the other faiths. I won't go into those in detail now. But just to say, in conclusion, how do you make this real? How do you become a reconciler yourself? And the answer I've suggested already is you have to work on yourself to begin with. You have to understand those emotions and particularly where those judgments you make come from. And at every stage, when you think you have an answer, go deeper. And you have to let go of all the accumulated prejudices, beliefs, positions and ideologies that we may have inherited and have been grafted onto us through the years. To encourage you, what I would say is that one way of summarising what the 80,000 people who have been to St. Ethelberg's have told us is a set of values that have come from listening to these people. And I'll share very briefly with you what those are. There are five. The first is that we should be welcoming to strangers, welcoming to people who come to us, and make them feel at home. No unconditional nothing less, sorry, than unconditional welcome works. Conditional welcome will perpetuate division. So welcoming people as equals and making them feel at home. The second is having an appetite, not just a tolerance of, an appetite for diversity. Seeing diversity as one of God's great gifts. And relishing and understanding diversity in a way that celebrates common humanity, but doesn't try to eliminate difference. So relishing diversity is the second thing. The third is a real challenge to me and to every one of us here, to recognise our own potential for violence. Every one of us in this room can, has been, and will be violent in some way. And none of us knows how we would behave were we in Libya or Egypt now. We simply do not know. So we cannot allow ourselves into the false comfort of thinking that we are peaceful. We are not. We are each violent. And we have to find ways of refusing to be violent. We probably can't stop our violent nature, but we can refuse to be violent. So that's the third value. The fourth is to give people the great gift of listening. Being present for people and listening to their stories. Curiosity is the biggest road to peace. That's the highway to peace. Curiosity about other people, not judgment or dismissal. And then the final thing is that peace comes not, it is not an external quality. There is not peace floating around in the ionosphere that we can kind of call down as a blessing, or that certain remarkable peacemakers, you know, can bring into a particular situation. Peace is how each of us lives our inner lives. Each of us must know how to be peaceful. And that is about how we conduct ourselves at the heart of our being. So there's five values: welcoming people, relishing diversity, refusing to be violent, listening to other people, and living our inner lives in a way that breeds peace. That's if you like, the wisdom of the 80,000 people who've been to St. Adalbergus. So just to turn that into a little period of prayer. First of all, I think it would be one of the things we've recognised at St. Adalbergus is silence, contemplation, meditation, stillness are the essential attributes of peacemakers. So let's just have a minute or so's silence. And I don't want you to do anything during this silence. Don't think, don't try, just be. And if thoughts come into your head, just let them go. Let go. Okay, so let's just have a minute of pure silent being. Now a prayer that we wrote on the 7th of July 2005. A prayer for an end to violence. God of life, every act of violence in our world between myself and another destroys a part of your creation. Stir in my heart a renewed sense of reverence for all life. Give me the vision to recognize your spirit in every human being, however they behave towards me. Make possible the impossible by cultivating in me the fertile seed of healing love. May I play my part in breaking the cycle of violence by realizing that peace begins with me.
Two friends, Sam and Joe, were walking together on the seashore when they started to argue. The argument became so heated that Sam slapped Joe across the face. Joe didn't retaliate and instead took a stick and wrote in the sand, "Today, Sam slapped me." And they made up, of course, as friends do, and some months later they went for a swim in the sea. And Joe's foot became entangled in some seaweed, couldn't free himself. And the sea was becoming rougher, and Joe started to panic. "Help! I'm drowning!" And Sam, who was much the stronger swimmer, heard his friend's cries, swam over, disentangled Joe's foot from that weed, pulled that half-drowned friend safely to shore. And when he'd recovered, the grateful Joe took a hammer and chisel and carved into the rock, "Today, Sam saved my life." "Well, after I hit you, you wrote about it on the sand, and today you chiseled it on a rock. Why is that?" asked Sam. "Well," came the reply, "when someone hurts us, let's record it in the sand, where the winds of forgiveness can erase it. But when someone does something really good for us, we'll then record it on rock, from which it will never be removed." Do you know the ancient story of the phoenix, the bird who, after hundreds of years of life, builds itself a nest made of the most fragrant pieces of bark and then sits in the full heat of the sun that it adores until it is itself consumed by fire? And yet the nest and the tree the nest sits upon are untouched by the powerful flames. And then from its own ashes, the phoenix arises once more, renewed and reinvigorated, and it carefully places the ashes of its old self in a beautiful egg and flies with the egg to present the ashes of its old self at the temple of the sun. It's a powerful myth. It appears in many forms throughout the world, and it speaks of our yearning for renewal. It's the renewal that we know in the changing of the seasons as summer starts to move towards autumn here in the Northern Hemisphere. That turning of the year is another image we have of the cycle of life turning. I think we need these images of movement and renewal, both in our individual lives and in the life of the world, because at times we're too aware of the opposite, of feeling stuck, of blocked in some way, of situations seemingly getting worse rather than better. And I think that's why I found these stories in the F Word exhibition so very inspiring. I recommend you don't leave this building today without looking at least one of these true life narratives from people who face some of the most painful of life's issues, and they've made something out of it, something positive, something life-affirming, some action, be it out there in the world or inside in their hearts and minds. There's something in them that refuses to be stuck, refuses to be written negatively in stone forevermore. These are all people who've chosen a path for peace. And what's notable about them is that I think all of them can be said to have then made a great difference in the lives of others, not just in themselves. It's as though that change of focus from the self to others is itself a healing process, whilst never forgetting the importance of tending to the self in great tenderness for the wounds that life has brought. For it's at that inner and individual level that reconciliation can first be achieved. So many of these stories of forgiveness speak of a person coming to terms with or understanding what has occurred, a refusal to add further to the cycle or understanding what has occurred, a refusal to add further to the cycles of violence and hatred and pain and misunderstanding that just churn through human communities, often through the generations. Some of the Forgiveness Project accounts speak of opposing people meeting up and becoming reconciled. Occasionally, a victim and a perpetrator meeting reconciliation members of their families. And as I explored this topic of reconciliation, a certain theme repeats itself. The value of offering people the chance to tell their story. A certain theme repeats itself. The value of offering people the chance to tell their stories and to ensure that they feel heard, really heard. And that, as Simon explained earlier, is one of the aspects. Building today, there is a poster for the Forgiveness Project. It shows Father Michael Lapsley, whose story actually isn't in our display, but who was a strong opponent of apartheid and was attacked with a letter bomb. Losing both his hands, the sight of one eye, shattering his eardrums. I heard him speak many years ago, and he very powerfully speaks not of forgiveness, because as he says, nobody ever admitted that crime. Nobody's ever come to his eardrums. I heard him speak many years ago, and he very powerfully speaks not of forgiveness, because moment, and also to the work of time. Nobody's ever come to our visitor here today, Simon Keyes, who is the director of St. Ethelburga's Centre for Reconciliation and Peace in the City of London, and forgiveness, but on Simon's kindly banner, Judaism recognises that need to examine our lives, to examine our thinking, and to examine the well-being of our heart, to be sure that we're not holding unnecessarily to hurts and wrongs that have been done to us, and to be sure that we have made amends for all the wrongs that we too have committed. I think this is both an individual and a collective community task of peace and reconciliation. And this is the work of the Phoenix that rises once again from the ashes of its own destroyed self. And that phoenix of mythology is an individual bird, it's the only one. Yet perhaps for us humans, the path is made a little easier when we actually work in community with others. So perhaps there are other phoenixes who can fly in and ask these simple yet profound questions. How are you? Tell me what has happened to you. How can I best support you? For you do not need to walk this path or fly in these skies or sit on this nest alone. Let's help one another. Amen.